You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Okay, so sometimes I've learned from experience that you can smoke too much weed before you're going to record, or you're going to write with your friends or something, because you might be feeling it right then, but you're not entirely like on the same plane that you're normally on. You know what I mean? So like you might be hearing something different, but your mind isn't perceiving it exactly how it's supposed to be perceived because your imagination's running and while you're creating. And I feel like that is hard, you know what I mean? And sometimes things get fucky, you know, it don't sound good.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians, talk all about their lives and music while sharing killer craft beers. I hope that you had a great weekend. I most certainly did. This Vox and Hops episode is presented by Heavy Montreal. Heavy Montreal are Montreal's premier metal promoter, and if you are ever in Montreal and you would like to go see a great show, well, I can absolutely guarantee you that Heavy Montreal will have you covered. I am beyond stoked to have Heavy Montreal behind the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. Are you in a band? Would you love to have your band's song featured in an upcoming Vox and Hops episode? If that would be the case, then you should definitely send me a message, write me an email. You can do that by hitting up matt@voxandhops.com. That's matt@voxandhops.com. Send me a message and I will hook you up and I will tell you all about being a part of the Vox and Hops Artist Spotlight segment. I love doing this. I love shining some light on killer bands. If you're in a band, you're launching a brand new song, you want to get a little bit more exposure for it, well, the Vox and Hops Artist Spotlight is there for you to do exactly that. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I'd just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. But more than that, I would love for you to tell a friend about the podcast. If you're someone in your life that just really enjoys cannabis, well, you should absolutely let them know that the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast exists. You could tell them that there are over 400 episodes where I sit down with some of the world's best metal musicians. We talk all about their lives and music and some of their favorite vices. If you would encourage one of your cannabis-loving friends to become a brand new Vox and Hops head, that would be something that I would truly appreciate. Now, today on the podcast, I'm very stoked to be with David Simonich of Signs of the Swarm. Get ready, everyone. This is a very special episode. This is Vox and Hops episode number 420.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today, I'm very stoked to be with a very special guest for the 420 episode of Vox and Hops. I'm with David Simonich of Signs of the Swarm. David, how you doing? I was looking around. I sort of like 420 like snuck up on me. I was like, who am I going to get? And I started asking people, who's like a weed guy in metal? Like, I'm the beer guy, obviously. Me, Dave Witte, a few other people. Who's like the equivalent in weed? And both Christian Donaldson and Bradley Zoridrager were like, David from Signs of the Swarm. So here we are, episode 420. People were saying Vokes and Tokes. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm really stoked that I could be here. I really appreciate the invitation to come in and be able to chat about some shit, man.
I'm stoked to have you here. Let's just jump straight into it. Vox and Hops is typically where I hang out with metal friends, talk about their lives and music while sharing craft beers. This episode's going to be a little bit different because you don't drink, but you do partake in a whole bunch of amazing things associated to 420. So what are you going to start off with on your side to kick this episode off, David?
I'm thinking about starting off with some Leafa Brands rosin here. It's a great concentrate. It's a sativa, so it won't have me sitting here wanting to take a nap while I'm talking to you.
I hope I'm not that boring.
No. It's just once you get into the rosin stuff, you know what I mean? Just a cautionary for all your listeners just in the podcast. The torch is going to kind of be a little loud for a second.
Oh, yeah. Toasting it up, getting it ready.
Oh, yeah. I'm currently dabbing on a turf blender It is where it has two marbles on the inside of the reservoir, where it spins the concentrate while you're smoking it.
Hell yes. See, that's the future, people. It's very far from back in the day when we all discovered this stuff.
I remember whenever concentrates like started hitting the industry. I always call it like during the Wiz Khalifa blow up, because like it was during like the time he was like it kind of exploding in the industry, at least mm-hmm. around for us.
I was my earlier people that I would witness doing stuff like this on the road was Leonard from Cephalic Carnage.
Oh yeah,
he was. I guess actually now that I'm talking out loud now, he would have been also been could have been a viable option for episode 420, because Leonard is also very deep within the world of 420, if my memory serves me correctly.
Yeah, honestly, I really haven't heard too many metal people in the cannabis community really at all. I have noticed that the owner of Blackcraft started his own little franchise there, Smoke Blackcraft, where the merchandise is more appealing to alternative users, you know? Like, they're like, their glass will have like skeletons and shit on it. It's really neat. Like, they got those, whatchamacallits, those little bat gummies, where yes. It's like, like an edible.
I don't understand why it's not more portrayed in the metal scene the way that beer is, let's say. There are a bunch of bands that have like smoking paraphernalia, such as Decrepit Birth and other bands such as that, the Grinders and stuff. I've seen Cattle Decapitation, come out, stuff like that. But to be such an activist, which is what basically you are,
yes,
with your article that came out in High Times back in 2021, pretty fucking cool thing. On my side, I am drinking a beer. I tried to find something as dank as possible. This is from EXP. So basically, hops and weed have a lot of stuff in common because they're basically like sisters.
Dude, honestly, I used to brew beer back in the day.
No way.
Yeah, I used to work for a company called More Flavor.
Okay.
And I got into brewing beer with them. And then I kind of ventured off into brewing mead and wines.
Yes.
That was more fun for me just because it's... Not so much stuff you have to watch and babysit. You know what I mean? Like,
it's really alive.
Yeah,
yes.
You know, like, I don't know. Plus, bottling is a bitch.
Bottling is a pain in the ass. This is their Teleportation New Zealand. So it's just a bunch of New Zealand hops. They got Nelson Sauvin, Reco, Sub-Zero, Hop Keef. It's a 6.5 percent IPA. And it's the dankest beer I could find to... honor the 420 episode. Sadly, all of the amazing beers that came out back in April to honor 420, because a lot of breweries are really into the weed culture and they make a bunch of beers and drop them on 420. But here we are, you know, we're in June now. A lot of those beers would not be as fresh and they are just not around. So I'm going to pour this out. Let's just take it back. You no longer drink now. You brewed beer before you went into the world of mead and wine. But take me back to your very first beer.
My very first beer. Holy shit. Oh, man. All right. It was with my buddy Josh. I'm not going to say his last name, but my buddy Josh from back in the day. I remember we were at this park. Like, it was this little like community park that had like a community swimming pool and stuff like that. I remember him literally sneaking by and robbing the beer from his mom's cooler.
Definitely happens.
You know, and... then it was like just me and him like sitting behind the little gazebo thing, just drinking the little guy, you know, and we felt like such hard asses. I can remember it, dude. And then, yeah, first beer, dude. Wow. I haven't been asked that question before.
I'm glad that I picked at something new, something that you did talk about. I guess that your first beer is very different from your first experience with weed, because you grew up in a household where weed was very prominent the way that normally drinking is prominent. So you didn't have to sneak your first weed, I assume.
Oh, no. Honestly, it was more along the lines of like my mom saying, quit smoking my fucking stash. You know what I mean? It's like shit. Like my grandma was having me roll her joints. You know what
wow.
I mean? Yeah, but weed was very normal in my household. It wasn't like really a big deal. You know what I mean? Like it was like within means, you know what I mean? I had to wait till I was a teenager to be able to start smoking and stuff, you know. It wasn't like, oh, I'm a baby, I'm smoking with weed. You know what I mean? Like, some people get it twisted and fucking got some wild shit. You know what I mean? In my household, I was raised that whenever you're old enough to start paying bills, that's whenever you're old enough to be able to smoke a joint. You know what I mean? And for me, I started paying bills young.
I love it. I love it. At what point did drinking become an issue? Did you got into the world of craft beer because you were brewing? And then at what point was it just too much and you had to step it back and only focus on consuming weed?
Well, with alcohol, I kind of got lost in it for a little bit. I say that because that's the best term that can come to mind with everything. I believe it was influencing me to turn into a person that I wasn't, you know? And I had a rude awakening whenever I was on tour in Japan, actually. And I had a crazy night out, lot of drinking.
Which Japan tends to be.
Yeah, dude, they just feed you alcohol all day, you know? Like, and I was going, you know what I mean? I was drinking good. Cause like, I love trying out the sakes and stuff, you know what I mean? Like stuff that like, I wouldn't be able to have access to. There's primo lines there that are just normal, you know? But I got really drunk and on a day off, and then the show day and that came in the next day and I was throwing up all day. I was so hungover. And I almost missed my show. And, that was like a rude awakening for me because, I'd really never seen my guys disappointed in me before like that. And, that's whenever I was like, you know what? Because like, I was already like having self-realizations, like I was having arguments with people that I didn't even fucking want to have an argument about, you know what I mean? It was just really on edge and it wasn't me, man. You know what I mean? And, that's whenever I felt like it was the best to kind of just take a step back and just quit drinking, you know?
I can completely imagine that situation. And here you are in Japan, of all places.
Dude.
An amazing feat, you know, for any musician. It's a dream to go play Japan. Here you are. You're finally there, prepared, you know, all the practicing, everything to bring you there. And then a vice being something that holds that back.
I feel like that I was living too much in the moment, you know what I mean? And I would definitely say that the vice kind of hindered me. And because, like, even since I quit drinking, my live show is way better, too. I'm more focused. I'm not just...
Were you drinking before gigs back then?
Not too much entirely, but there have been some ones, and you know how it goes. Fucking, it's always that one.
You learn how many is okay, and then you remember that show where that one was too many, which is leading to the next question of how does that work with weed consumption? Is there something you can do before you play a show, and has there been those experiences when you've discovered that it's too much, this strain, this experience, how many hours before? Talk to me about that.
So with pre-show rituals with weed, I try not to smoke concentrate before I play. It honestly just dries me out too bad. I just, to get the crisp, like, wetness to my tone that I aim for, you know what I mean? I try my best to try to stay away from the concentrates, at least before I play. I'll smoke flower nonstop. It's really not that big of a deal in my opinion. You know what I mean? I'd rather smoke a joint than a cigarette, you know what I mean?
yeah.
You know, like, after I play, though, that's whenever I'll allow myself to, like, have concentrates and edibles. Edibles, no way before I play. you can't trust those motherfuckers ever, dude. The labels are never right. I don't care what anyone says.
Yeah, because I don't know, I'm not very well versed in it, but I can just imagine, like, in a cooking aspect of things, and then you're pre-packaging stuff out. So how do you know how much is going into how much of each little thing?
See, like, that's where, like, I believe that they have no idea what they're doing.
I feel like it's something that's going to be regulated a lot harder in the future, for sure.
See, I feel like that it has been, I believe... All right, to my knowledge, I could be wrong. So if I trigger somebody that is a cannabis enthusiast and, like, it's not the right thing, I'm sorry. But I do believe that most places keep it down to 100 milligrams for some recreational places per packaging. Just so, because they know that it's that much inside that entire packet. You know
Understood.
What I mean?
Yeah.
Versus, like, they were doing, like, 500 milligram candy bars, and then that whole 500 milligrams is on this much of the candy bar, not on that much. You know what I mean? And then someone's eating it, and they're
just
have,
like, a wild night.
Yeah, you know, just melting.
I've toured with people that are avid weed consumers, weed enthusiasts. I'm very lucky that my vice is available basically in every country. I can go grab a beer just about anywhere, but I've toured with people that they can't get, and then they're jonesing and they're sort of grumpy. What has been your experience touring and being out in the world where you just can't have it? Is it something that it's a day and it's an annoyance if you don't have it?
Not really, dude. Like, honestly, like, that, I just call that tea time, because the tolerance goes down. So, you know what I mean?
Tea time, I like that.
it's just a little tolerance break, you know what I mean? I don't get any, like, withdrawals, quote unquote, you know what I mean? Like,
so I've definitely toured with some grumpy people when they don't have it around.
Yeah, but those are just, they're just grumpy.
They're just innately grumpy.
Yeah, like, because whenever I'm not able to have weed, I'm doing things that I love and I am enjoying my life.
Hell
you
yes.
know what I mean? Like, yeah. I use weed as something to connect me even further with people. You know what I mean? Like, I could sit down and just have a smoke with somebody. You know what I mean? I don't even got to know the motherfucker. Just, I talk about how his day is going. You know what I mean? Like,
I like that. It's exactly like me with beer. I think it's very, very interesting. Back to a classic Vox and Hops question. We'll dance back into the weed questions later. The soundtrack of your youth, when you're growing up in your parents or guardians' house, what music was playing when you were not in control of the music? What music did your parents or guardians listen to?
Oh, dude, fucking, my mom was, like, a big sucker for, like, that 90 grunge era. Yeah, so there was, like, a lot of Smashing Pumpkins. My stepdad listened to a lot of Nirvana. Alice in Chains, a lot of typical radio bands, quote unquote, you know what I mean? Like Soundgarden,
the radio was a little bit better back then.
Yeah. But. Yeah. That's for sure. You know, Deftones.
I'm showing,
you know,
my,
I mean,
age.
Some of the things that, like, I still listen to this day, you know what I mean? Might be the nostalgia of it. I'm not sure, you know, but yeah, that was some of the stuff that I lived with my mom primarily. My mom also was a huge, like, Destiny Child, like, Lil Kim lady, you know what I mean? She loved,
nice,
like, some good, like, hip hop and R&B. Definitely rubbed off on me. That's for sure. But yeah, fucking my stepdad, he would always just, like, kind of play more like the grunge rock shit for the most part. Nowadays, like, really don't listen to the radio with them that much, unfortunately, you know, but
what would be the first artist that you brought into the house that your parents had to put up with because you were just so in love with it?
Dude, Dance Club Massacre. Do you remember them?
I know the name. I don't believe I ever heard them.
They got that fucking big ass fucking spider fucking stabbing that bitch with the fucking, I don't know. It's yeah. But, dude, fucking, it was, like, the most evil grindcore ever. That, you know what I mean? Like, that fucking psycho shit, dude. It was so good.
were they ready for it? Did they accept it? Or was it too much for them?
Honestly, like, once I started falling down that road of, like, listening to heavier music, that was the least of their worries. They didn't give a shit.
because you're already out partying too much and enjoying.
Yeah. For the most part.
Being a wild child.
Pretty much, you know. I really didn't have, like, the whole, like, typical, like, white picket fence, like, household. You know what I mean? So whenever I was, like, listening to, like, death metal and stuff, that was kind of whenever things were a little bit different than they were, you know what I mean?
So it's a pure cathartic release music.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, for sure.
Discovering that music can be something that transposes the negative energy.
Yeah, you know? And that's whenever I started diving, like, figuring out, like, my local scene, and then started venturing out, making more friends, you know what I mean? And that's whenever, like, I started my own, like, my first band, you know what I mean? And then that band turned into another band, and then that started a new one, and then I got kicked out, and then I'm in this, I start this new one, and then, you know how it goes, being a kid trying to fucking do shit.
It's one thing after another, but it all started somewhere. Do you remember the first time you attempted to do harsh vocals?
Yes, I do.
What was that song? What was the experience? Where were you? Because I gradually fell into harsh vocals. It was like one jam after another that just sort of pushed me.
I was one of those kids that was like, I'm going to mosh till I fucking die, bro. You know what I mean? I used to be one of those guys.
The whole show.
Yeah, so I had like a huge appreciation for the music already. Like, I didn't have a lot of money growing up, so like I didn't have the means to get an instrument. And all my friends wanted to start a band. And then like I was like, oh, that can't be that hard. And then, like, I tried doing it, and then my buddy was just like, yo, that's sick as fuck. And then,
see?
Yeah.
What's that guy's name? Give him a shout-out, because he might not be here.
Dude, fucking Cody.
Yeah, you might not be here if it wasn't for Cody giving you that first sense of, like, confidence.
Dude, honestly, if it wasn't for Cody, I would not be where I am today.
Isn't that cool? I will
give him that 100% token right there.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah. Yeah, him and my buddy Justin. Yeah, those two guys. Because Justin took me to my first show. So, yeah, those two guys, like, literally made my life this way.
I often say on the podcast that I'm happy that I'm a little bit older than some of the guests I speak with, and my first gigs don't exist.
How old are you? I'm sorry.
I am going to be 40 this year, believe it or not.
Oh, shit. You look great.
I it's the beer. I'm pickled.
Jesus Christ. Oh, man.
So there's no, like, evidence, really, of my first attempts of doing any new style of vocals that necessarily exists. But take me through the gradual progression of your voice and what steps you took to become, because you're a very proficient vocalist, one of the top of the scene at this moment. Talk me through just becoming better, and don't just say that you were just practicing and got better.
Yeah. All right. So, I'll rewind it back to whenever, like, I tried figuring out, like, what I was doing. I wanted to try to sound like the dude from Arsonist Gets All the Girls.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. That's like the tone that, like, my friends were kind of like pushing me to try to figure out a lot, because I had a really good high yell, and like they thought it was really cool, because like I listened to grindcore, so I was always like at work, like, you know what I mean, just like fucking losing my mind cleaning shit, you know.
You're that guy.
I fucking like to jam out, dude. Fucking, like, you know, fucking,
which is the secret to getting better. You got to use it. It's like a muscle, right? So
yeah,
if you don't work out, it's gonna be fucking sore.
Yeah, truly. But all right, so I'll fast forward a bit, and then like got into a band, like, after, like, I started figuring out, like, the basics. And, like, you can, like, go back. There's, like, YouTube videos of me doing vocals, like, 11, 12 years ago. Like, covering, like, The Contortionist, Molotov Solution.
Interesting.
After the Burial.
Like, just you, like...
Dude, it is the most miserable thing to watch. Like, literally, like, I thought about doing, like, a then to now thing, because, like, dude, I'm talking about MySpace V-neck fucking shit, like, fucking, like, because, like, I recorded it and then just, like, mouthed it over top of the video, you know what I'm saying? I didn't, like, actually do it, you know? It was so bad, you know, but whoever could find it, like, that's just a little token, you know.
It lives on the internet.
Yeah, that's how you know I'm a real one. I was out there. Mm-hmm. I was out there putting out the cringe videos. I already did it.
It also shows, it shows people that if you put work in, there will be improvements.
Yeah, truly. Because, like, if you look back then, like, if you do end up looking at those videos or whatever, my voice is very uncontrolled. I'm pushing. Mm-hmm. You could tell that I'm hurting myself. I was not doing vocals properly. As I grew into the vocalist I am, from that moment, I was just doing a lot of covers back then. And then I got into another band, and that's whenever I started playing with other people. And I tried doing the whole, like, I'm going to cover the band I'm going to play with. You know what I mean? And try to, like, just do that for YouTube stuff. And just to, back then, you know what I mean? Like, that was before, like, Reels and, like, Instagram. Fucking Facebook was just starting to take off at that point in time. But then I kind of moved forward and joined a band called Improvidence. I replaced their vocalist because he went to, like, culinary school. So I was with that band for such a long time. I love those guys. I've had great moments with them. They're the guys that I went on my first tour with. Like, all those guys are off living amazing lives, and I'm stoked for everybody that was a part of that band. After I graduated college and Improvidence was more of like a hobby thing, I was working in a weld shop as a foreman.
Really?
Yeah. I actually have a degree in welding technology and metallurgy.
Backup plan.
Yeah. Well, honestly, that was just the plan. You know what I mean? And then I had a buddy of mine named Jake. He actually is used to be in the management team for Signs of the Swarm. He's currently working for Snot, the rapper, now. So his career has went in a different path, obviously. I love him, and he knows deep down in my heart I love him. So, but he calls me while I'm at work one day, and he's like, hey, do you want to fill in for Signs on this Ingested tour? Because he was a friend of mine, you know what I mean? Like, he knew I loved Ingested, and he knew I would, like, I'd geek out over going on that tour, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I love them, yeah.
So I was like, all right, I'll do it only if I have a potential slot to actually get the job. And they're like, if you learn this set in 11 days, get in the van and crush this tour, we'll talk about it.
Okay.
And then I was like, all right, sick. I don't have a passport, though. And then fucking I wasn't able to do the Canada date. So I had to, like, fly around and take buses and shit. It was weird. Took a huge L trying to get that to happen.
Financially, yes.
Yeah, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, oh, I got to pay for this flight. And
yeah.
It was like one of Sign's, like, first real national tours. My you God, know what okay. I mean? Ingested, Body Snatcher, and Signs of the Swarm. Fucking, yeah. I will cherish that tour forever. I got that bitch tattooed on me, on my ankle.
Really?
Yeah, I got the initials. Ugh.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And then the Ingested guys are just the best, man.
Yeah, honestly, fucking, I got to become close with all them. And I've toured with them multiple times. And yeah, honestly, I love those guys so much.
What would be like an aha moment for your voice where things just clicked? And like the if you were like in a labyrinth, like you get like a bird's eye view of the labyrinth, let's say.
I'll give you two aha moments. One for actual vocal, like actual vocalizing, and then two for recording. For my first one, for vocalizing, is whenever Dave Bernese from the Extreme Vocal Institute.
He's the best.
Yeah, he suggested me to lay down on the ground and do vocals until my back doesn't leave the ground.
Oh.
Being at complete rest. And he was like, I challenge you to do that. And if you could do that, I promise you that your life will change. And then as soon as I figured out how to hit my tones without any back arch, that was the aha moment.
I like that. Yeah. Extreme Vocal Institute, people, go check it out.
Yeah. Like, honestly, it's they're a great resource, for like gaining more vocal knowledge. I hit up Dave and see him every time I'm out his way. I love those guys. They're great. They're like, I consider them personal friends of mine. I've worked with them for so long. You know what I mean? But another aha moment is whenever I took a step back away from the mic.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Dude. Like in the studio.
Yeah. Cause like
being far,
I was tracking like this.
Yes.
And then that proximity effect was, kind of hindering my voice and fucking up the mix. And I literally tracked that way, my entire career until Amongst Alone Empty releasing. Unbridled was tracked that same method. It's just people were just letting me come in and just do whatever the fuck I wanted to do, you know what I mean? And then I sat down and worked with the producer, and he was like, all right, I will let you track it the exact way you want to. He was like, exactly how you want to. And I'm just like, all right, cool. I thought I won the argument, you know what I mean? Like, I was like, all right, fucking, I got to track what I. And then he was like, all right, now just humor me, do me the same shit you just did, but I want you to take a step back. Mm. And then he was like, better yet, I want you to kick back in that fucking chair and relax like you're telling me about you lay down. And I'm just like, all right, game changed.
Really? You track the whole record sitting down in a chair?
Dude, fucking dead ass. Some things I did have to stand up for, you know what I mean? Like, there are some like excessive vocal parts that are really fast and kind of long. Kind of parts, so like I had to brace myself for that shit, but yeah, like that was a definite aha moment, because whenever I heard the AB and somebody just being like, no dude, you're doing it this way and I promise you it's gonna sound 50 times better, and
super sick. Very interesting.
There were some times where like the effect was necessary though, where like where I did bring that proximity effect in, so it made the voice more harsh.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I used it more as a tool now since I knew what the fuck it was. You know what I mean?
Fantastic.
So that was like a recent aha moment, and I really haven't shared that information with anyone, really. So.
Why, thank you. I appreciate that very much. I'll slip the word to Christian Donaldson.
Yeah, see, like, because I tracked my stuff somewhere else, you know, and sent it to him, because he fucking... I love Absolvere's mix. Like, seriously, the fucking... dude, that guitar tone he got? Fucking chainsaw shit, dude.
Amongst Alone Empty is coming out July 28th via Century Media. Big record label. First big record label. Unique Leader before that. I think it's super awesome that you guys are jumping like that. Talk to me about this record. I've read a little bit about it. I might have... gotten some info from Christian Donaldson, which I'm going to ask about. Most of it was written in the studio. You guys are blending a whole bunch of stuff, old school death metal, some hip hop, some EDM. Yeah. You guys are fucking around. You lost a member right before jumping into the studio and you basically scrapped everything. Talk to me about Amongst the Low and Empty and this whole writing in a studio versus coming prepared.
Well, shit. All right. So, we usually would write inside Skype meetings, where we...
Really? That's horrible. We've done that. That's not fun.
See, like, it's actually not that bad. You know what I mean? Because Bobby will be, like, the head DAW. You know what I mean? And he'll screen share his DAW. And then we'll have our sessions pretty much just, like, in our background. And you really won't be able to see what's going on other than, like, the DAW, essentially. And then we're talking to each other about how things are going. And then we'd like track stuff for like MIDI map some things out, export it out, send it to Bobby all inside the chat. It worked out really well for a while. So we did that for Absolvere. And then we started doing that for some newer stuff that didn't get used really. Going into the studio, we ended up parting ways with our guitar player, Jeff Russo. It was just something that just kind of needed to happen for the band. We wish him the best of luck, and it is what it is. Moving forward, we had to trash everything. You know what I mean? We didn't want to move anything forward.
Is it because it was his ideas? Or
no, it was just because we wanted to start from scratch. We had a different entire mindset of what we wanted to do for the record after kind of just like reassessing what the fuck we were doing. We were like, dude, we are moving to Century Media Records, an affiliate of Sony. We need to get our shit together. And that's whenever me and Bobby like were like, all right, well, what are we going to do? And that's whenever he was like, all right, I'm going to track all the guitars and I'm going to do drums. And he was like, we need to just kind of just take it bit by bit. And then I was like, sick. And then I was like, all right, I'm going to try to find some producers to work with us. That's whenever I contacted Cameron, the drummer of Born of Osiris. I asked him if he would like to kind of jump on board and kind of help with some production stuff and kind of just help our brains turn a little bit. You know what I mean? We only had Michael, Bobby, and myself in the studio with Josh Schroeder. So we were like, if we could have another ear, that'd be an amazing, and just another brain to input stuff. He helped with a lot on the record. And then that's whenever we were kind of chatting a little more and we were like, okay, Cameron's a great producer and songwriter. But we need to kind of get maybe some guitarist kind of mentality going on here. And that's whenever we thought about one of the best in the game, Josh Travis. Resume doesn't even need explained. Do you know what I mean? That was a no-brainer. We were honored that he was stoked to even be a part of the project. He helped out a lot with the production, adding some layers and stuff. And then that's kind of when we just started writing, dude. You know what I mean? Bobby got locked up in Studio A. Me and Mike got locked inside Studio B. And me and Mike were just crushing away at lyrics while Bobby wrote the bass line of the songs.
So cool.
And pretty much as Bobby would finish a song, he'd send it to us by AirDrop, because we all work on Apple. So everything's just super easy to AirDrop to each other through the walls, dude. Fucking, it's nice. So he AirDrops us the new song, and then we try to figure out the vibe. And then that's whenever we figure out what song it is and try to kind of figure out a little piece of the puzzle. You know what I mean? We're kind of building it on the spot. So it was like
building a city, but you don't know which brick goes in which building.
Exactly, man. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Fucking. So we're fucking like hiving away in the, like just working our asses. And we thought we were done. And like we left the studio after being there for about a month. And we had a good record, we thought, but went home and we sat back and thought about it. And we were like, nope, we need to go back. We need to fix a couple parts. And that's whenever we decided to go back and just tweak a little bit of things. And that, I definitely feel like that those are the little things that help the record make it that much special. Malady and Faces Without Names were songs that weren't even there until we went back.
Ooh. Interesting.
Yeah, so we actually chopped out two songs and made room for those.
Fucking right.
So those songs had a little bit of writing at home, you know what I mean? So I can't say the entire record was written in studio, but I will say a song 1 through 8 were, you know? And I think that's fucking sick because it was hard. You know what I mean?
There's a lot of pressure, that's for
sure.
Yeah,
that's because like,
you had to be creative.
Yeah, you know? And,
on the spot. But when you're like immersed and together and it's just vibing and it's a cycle of just creativity.
Yeah, honestly, man, once we got a good rhythm going, it was like, it was just money, dude. You know what I mean? And then like just working through the songs as a group, people sitting there listening as I'm tracking and as Bobby's tracking, as Michael's tracking, because we were trying to shoot a documentary for this too. So like we might even have a documentary coming. I don't know. It's like
content.
Yeah. It's like one of those things where like I have the teaser for it, but I don't have the full length, you know what I mean? So it's like one of those scenarios. You know what I'm saying? So like,
I completely crossed, understand. it sounds like a lot of maturity went into this new record, being like open to having extra people in the room that aren't necessarily in the band to help.
Dude, I had somebody tell me I wrote a B+ chorus and it broke my fucking heart.
And I read Chester Bennington did 20 takes, 20 different ideas for a chorus. So a B+ is not so bad.
Yeah, no, but see, but then that's what made me go back super pissed, and I made that B+ into an A+. You know what I'm saying? That chorus, it was for the chorus and melody. It fucking hits now, though.
Fucking, there you go. Just, see, but you need to hear those hard things, and it's important to be in a band where you can tell people these hard things.
See, that's the part of being a creative with other creatives. You know what I mean? Like, it's not just a one-man show. You know what I mean? It's everybody working in unison together.
And you're building. You're building that city together. Everyone's involved. Hey, what's up, Vox and Hopsheads? I just want to take a little moment about Cryptopsy's upcoming tours. That's right, I'm talking about the Scream of Perseverance tour and our headliner dates that coincide with that tour called As Summer Burns. The Scream of Perseverance tour is kicking off at the end of May and runs all the way until the end of June. We are supporting the mighty Death to All. We are going all over the United States, and we are hitting some of Canada. So excited to be honoring the legendary music of Death alongside amazing musicians that performed on these albums. Even more stoked to be doing some headliner dates in some cities that I've actually never played in. If you are planning to come to any of these shows, you should definitely grab your tickets by going to voxandhops.com/summer, and you will be able to grab all of your tickets there. That's voxandhops.com/summer. Do it, people. Come hang out with me. Enjoy life, metal, and craft beer in your hometown. Come to a show. We're going to have a great time. Now, enough about all of that. Let's get back to the episode. Back to the weed. Talk to me about using weed for creative aspects when you're in the studio. I've read that you only normally dabble with CBD when you're writing. It helps you get a fresh perspective, and you freestyle patterns when you fuck around with weed too.
Okay, so sometimes I've learned from experience that you can smoke too much weed before you're going to record, or you're going to write with your friends or something, because you might be feeling it right then, but you're not entirely like on the same plane that you're normally on. You know what I mean? So like, you might be hearing something different, but your mind isn't perceiving it exactly how it's supposed to be perceived, because your imagination's running and while you're creating. And I feel like that is hard, you know what I mean? And sometimes things get fucky, you know, it don't sound good. I mean, I'm just gonna be truthful, you know what I mean? Like, you get a little too stoned, and then it's just like you start just like talking about nonsense, or you just completely like brain fart. You just don't even know what to write. You just sit there just like, dun, 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 you know what I mean? Like, you just don't know.
And that's something that you had to learn from experience.
Yeah. You know what I mean? There's been many times where, like I drove from Pittsburgh to Wheeling and, like, met up with Bobby, and I'm like, hey, I got too stoned, and I forgot what we were, like, what were we going to do for this part again? And it's just like, bro, you're worthless. And I'm just like, I'm sorry.
Just record everything. Just record everything.
And then, but it does help, like, get a fresh mindset on it too, because sometimes like you'll be stoned and you'll be in a good creative point. You know what I mean? Like, there's times whenever I'm smoking and I can't sleep and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to jump on Logic and I'm going to tab out some guitar riffs on Odin. You know what I mean? Or I'm going to get on Guitar Pro and try tabbing something, or like, I'm going to try writing a couple lines just for sit in the corner. You know what I mean? I feel like the best shit ever written is whenever you're in those points where, like, you're usually sleeping, but you can't sleep. I feel like that those are the best creative points.
Totally. And that's, like, those moments when, like, it's in the back of your mind and it wants to get out.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Keeping you awake.
That's what I'm saying, dude. I feel like that those are like the best ideas that ever manifest into like reality. Like,
I think it's super cool. I'm stoked for the new material. I've heard some stuff. It's going to be good. The new age of deathcore is exciting. The boundaries are expanding the way that they're expanding in many multiple metal genres. Talk to me about the future of deathcore. Where do you think this is going? Obviously, the big hitter right now, Lorna Shore, has done you guys all a great favor, really opening up the platform to the younger generations. Discovering deathcore, discovering these extreme vocals, the coolness factor of deathcore is definitely through the roof. I'm from Montreal, despised icon hometown. You know, they waved the flag pretty hard, starting stuff off. So talk to me about deathcore and the future of deathcore.
I will say 100% that everything that Lorna Shore has achieved is well earned. And those guys deserve the most respect for what they have done and what they have endured and how they got to where they are. I just had to make note of that real quick. But the future of deathcore, I feel like, is very promising. I feel like that we are in an era of time where people are more acceptable to aggressive music. I believe that it's not even just deathcore. It's just, you could see it in modern mainstream that they're starting to rip off of punk lines again. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I like to think of it as like a repeat of the 90s almost, but just heavier. You know what I mean? Like, at least that's kind of like where my mind kind of like takes it, because like you see all these heavier bands playing bigger shows again. It's not just Lorna Shore. It's just heavy bands in general playing huge festivals. And it's fucking great. You know what I mean? It's people not just going to just see Slipknot anymore. You know what I mean? It's Slipknot and then the whole generation of metal that's still alive and able to play shows. You know what I mean? Like, at least if you reach that echelon, you know what I mean? You're playing them. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that just in general, that metal as a whole, including deathcore, death, like, whatever you want to say, just within the metal lane, I believe it is on the uprising. I literally have toured around the world in the last, since COVID released, essentially. I will say that the crowds are getting bigger. People are knowing the words. They're not just screaming nonsense anymore. You know what I mean? Like, it's getting better and it's awesome. You know what I mean? Like, just seeing how there's local communities of like people that just give a fuck about each other again. You know what I mean? It reminds me of like whenever I was younger and like there was this venue called the BCA and like, they threw shows and that was where I went for my escape. And I got to see bands and learn about the music and learn this culture. You know what I mean? Like that's where I got my first blood. You know what I mean? Like fucking, but yeah, kind of went off a ramble there.
you're doing good. It's Vokes and Tokes. Come on.
Yeah. I should maybe do some
Tokes. Go for it. I'll preface it with my thoughts about deathcore. I think that you hit on something that there's a lot more acceptance for extremities in modern mainstream stuff, but there's also a lot more acceptance, and not for everyone, but it's coming, for in extremities, people are more acceptable of things that are not just metal anymore. There's more openings to including things that are like hip hop based and like Sleep Token is something that's like resonating in my mind at this exact moment. You know what I mean? So metal fans are more open to showcasing and following things that they love and appreciate that isn't strictly extreme metal. Ghost, Sleep Token are like perfect, Spirit Box, perfect examples of that.
Yeah, honestly, that's a great take on that, truly, because like Spirit Box, they blew up so hard.
So fast.
So hard. They blew up so fast. And like, I remember when that video came out, Holy Ruler. I remember when that shit came out. I was like, yo, this is a banger, bro. And then next thing you know, 3 days later, it's like a million views. Fucking everybody's doing vocal covers of it. And I'm like, holy fuck, they're up. True. I was like, they're up, dude. Get it. Because that fucking, Ruler of Nines, that song hit so hard, dude. Yeah, fucking so
killing.
Good.
Just killing. Talk to me about Bradley Zorgdrager, good friend of mine, managing you. Talk to me about working with Bradley Zorgdrager, what he's like as a manager. Talk to me about having him in your camp, someone that texts you yo-yo to start a conversation. What's going on with the Zorgdrager in your mind?
I love Brad. He's saved my life on so many fucking occasions, dude. Like, he'll call me and be like, Dave, you remember this fucking interview is coming up in like 10 minutes, right? And I'm like, oh, shit.
I hope that wasn't tonight.
No, it wasn't tonight. It wasn't tonight. I promise. I was looking
teasing.
Forward
I'm teasing
because
I texted you earlier today, too.
No. I know. Trust me. I was like, I called
Brad. I've sat here alone before.
No way. Oh, that's
sometimes it happens.
See, I, dude, honestly, if you ever need like an actual drink or drinker from the band, ask for Mike. Mike has the best.
Interesting.
Mike has the best podcast voice.
Perfect.
Yeah, like seriously, it. He used to do radio for while he was in college.
Really?
Yeah, he used to be the radio guy. For his college radio.
Okay, well, Mike, you're in trouble. We're going to have a chat. But back to Zorgdrager. He saved your life.
He saves my life on so many occasions. He saves me so many fucking headaches. He probably saved me from losing my left leg at this point, you know? But yeah, ever since he joined our team, he's really like kind of helped us figure out what the fuck's going on. Because me and Bobby have been kind of just like, kind of roughing it, trying to figure it out as we go, you know what I mean? And like whenever the band kind of grows faster than you can learn how to kind of understand,
keep
that
up with it.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's like, it's kind of just like growing a little faster and faster to like, and it's just like, well, shit, like I thought you were watching emails today. No, I thought you were watching emails today, you know?
Like, when a band becomes more popular, it's like you're a juggler and then there's just more and more balls to catch.
Yeah, dude, like honestly, I don't understand how Brad does it for us and multiple bands. Like, he has, like, 30 fucking projects, bro. Like, at all times, fucking, like literally, like, I was on the phone with him the other day. He was like, oh, yeah, I forgot to tell you, I'm working for Three Teeth now. And I'm like, that's fucking sick, but how do you have that much time? I just know what I'm doing. Okay. Fucking, I love a man that's confident like that, you know? Has a way to my heart, you know?
I love collabs. It's something that I do a lot with the podcast. I've done it with Cryptopsy. I've released basically over 80 collabs in the past 4 years. Talk to me about what would be the perfect collab for Signs of the Swarm. Have you guys done a weed strain? Is that something for it seems really on brand.
I've been fucking trying. Okay, so I did a collaboration with Cola Farms. Shout out Cola Farms from Michigan. You guys are fucking great. Thank you for having us at your farm. We did a collaboration with them. We shot a playthrough of Unbridled in
that's
weed farm.
Brand. I like that.
Which that's not even released yet. Like, we literally just have it in a Google Drive just sitting there. But once we release that, or if we release it, we were thinking about changing it to just the drum playthrough. Because like it's like has like everybody doing shit in the weed farm. It's kind of extra. Like, we got drone shots flying around. Fucking
Jesus
all
Christ!
Yeah, dude, like it was crazy. They had like 1,500 plants growing at that point in time. Yeah, they put us in this nice lake house and gave us a bunch of product to sample and try out, so we knew what
sounds
we were
like
seeing
day.
Today. Oh yeah, dude, it was great. Fucking, he had a bunch of taxidermies that creeped the fuck out of me. It reminded me like some
like
Evil Dead shit, like where like they're gonna come to life.
Yeah,
and
I don't like that.
You know what I mean? Like,
I don't like that. It's so funny. That reminds me of, we played a festival in Germany and we were sleeping in this little house with full of like little like stuffed dolls, and Ollie from Cryptopsy Cattle Decapitation went into his room and he's like, fuck that, I'm sleeping in the van.
Dude, if you see in my guest room, dude, my fiance has literally like 33 dolls that are the creepiest fucking things, dude.
Oh, okay, well, when Ollie comes through, you can But weed, yeah, that would be cool. So you shot the playthrough there. What is the limitation?
See, I tried working on doing a collab with Cola Farms, which that kind of like fell through after we did the playthrough. We tried doing it. We were in the doorway with Double Bear, and we were at the point of product gauging, and that was to see like how much product that we can actually handle on sale. Once we kind of like did the numbers and how they wanted us to sell it, we didn't have that much numbers in the state that they wanted. And then there's another company called Nugget Abductions. Really close friend of mine. Fucking great guy. Keep doing what you're doing, bro. Fucking if you're listening. We were going to do a collab together where it was tinctures to implement into your food. So you could like lightly spike your food so you could get a light edible hit. You know what I mean? Nothing that's going to knock you on your ass. Yeah. You know what I mean? We had song title branding. I'm going to keep that on the DL just in case if it does come to life. You know what I'm saying? But we had two different, a high and a low tier. And whenever it came to actually pulling the trigger, it was like, I'm scared to do this and have you guys promote it where it's internationally. You know what I mean? Like,
I was going to ask that question. It's like, if you do something like this, are you worried when you go to countries where it is illegal? Are you going to be,
that's the problem,
like flagged as a band that would hypothetically be a problematic in that area?
Yeah. See, like that's kind of like the thing. So with the company that Nug Abductions, we were about to cross the finish line on actually getting the product made and straight, like we're going to have it. But we are only able to sell it in Michigan.
Yes. Yes.
And we would have to find actual dispensaries that would buy the product.
Absolutely.
And be their stock. And then we'd have to do a whole promo line of that. So pretty much it just ended up being a money trail of just having to drop more and more money into, okay, yes, I got this done now. Then now I got to pay to get into the dispensary. And then I got to pay for my ads to go through to guarantee the dispensaries and sell the product within the X amount of time that is agreed upon.
Not that far from making a beer, which is interesting. It's very similar because of the restrictive laws of selling alcohol.
Yeah, it's definitely like it's really complicated to the point that I haven't been successful for it, and I've been trying my fucking damnedest. I want to have. I could just have one crop of just one grow where it is literally just Signs of the Swarm branded weed with the idea that I have, I would feel complete.
I wish it happens, and I hope that someone that's listening to this can make that happen. But the way that it happens, and it's the same thing with music, is that it's a slippery slope, and you're never satisfied. I only wanted one beer collab, and now I have 80. You know, it's never enough.
My dream is that I want to have like cannabis companies like be like how fucking Budweiser will sponsor a festival, and like,
yes,
like there's one, you know what I mean? I want to be
Denver,
that's
California.
What I'm saying. That's
come
perfect.
On.
Denver, yeah. California, fucking Michigan, Washington, Oregon, Nevada. You know what I mean? There's so many different places where like there could be massive cannabis festivals that are based on the alternative community.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like where it's not just Bob Marley playing, you know what I mean? Like, or some EDM music where like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, everybody forgets metal guys, like, you know, metal people in general just like love smoking weed just as much as everybody else does.
You know, I think you're onto something, and within the next 5 years, that is totally going to be happening. And I hope that you're like a flag bearer that's like there and headlining it.
I wouldn't be headlining probably if I could. I would just be stoked. I would just be stoked to be able.
Amongst the low and the empty, who knows what's going to happen?
Dude, honestly, I hope the best for our record. It's truly something special. You know what I mean? So. Even if it doesn't do anything for us and it's just there, it's something special that we poured our souls into, you know what I mean? And, Bobby put it one of these ways that has resonated with me ever since I've heard him say it. Whenever he was writing this record, he just wanted to show a different perspective of deathcore. And I truly believe that that is the best way to put in words about this record. You know what I mean? Because like, it's like, there's so much variety to the record where it can appeal to almost any metal listener. Where you like metalcore, if you like extreme metal, like you like genty stuff, you like just knuckle dragger riffs. You know what I mean? Like, it's there. There's the disgusting vocals. There's clean singing. There's like harmonized yelling. There's a little bit of everything. I like to say that we salt and peppered this bitch good. You know what I mean?
That sounds exciting. That I'm stoked that you guys pulled out all the stops and that you didn't do what I'm sure a lot of bands are going to do, and we're going to see more and more bands doing, just basically becoming Lorna Shore 2.0 because they had some success. You guys have continued with your identity, but just pushed it to the limit and really dragged out all of your personal influences and put it into this new album.
Dude, literally, it was nice working with Josh because we told him, like, hey, like, if we, like, are writing anything that kind of seems like it sound like Lorna Shore, you tell us that it sounds like Lorna Shore and we got to can it. And he was like, oh, that's easy. Fucking literally. That's literally like, we wanted to expand on our sound and show our influences and kind of just like hit our roots a little more. You know what I mean? Like shit, like we busted out an old 70s wah guitar pedal, dude. You know what I mean? Like we like hit like roots, like this one sound in this song. Like how did they do that back in the day? You know what I mean? Like that one part that like captured us for us or for just Bobby or just me or Mike. You know what I mean? We have like little hints of like those like type of like influential like thoughts throughout the record that just really make it just take it somewhere else, man. Like shit, there's this one part in Shackles Like Talons where like I tracked this spoken word shit on this old school fucking tape recorder, bro.
So cool.
Yeah, like literally like an old school like you take to like class type shit, you know what I mean? And like I put it there and like he's like, I want you to do it with the headphones on to the tempo and everything so I could like record it and put it in there, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, all right, cool. And I do it. And then like he's playing it back and it's like fucking up while he's playing it back. And he was like, no, it's supposed to do that. And I was like, oh. And then he's like playing it and like it through the thing and like tracking it. And like we play it back and then he's like, yo, we need to add a little spice to it. And I was like, remix machine. And he was like, you read my mind. And then fucking put the remix machine on it, like in little hints of pieces right there. And fucking dude, that part, it takes me soaring because like it's under this drum and bass, or it's like over top this like drum and bass part where like the guitars are doing this real big ambient like thing. Fucking awe. I'm going to tell Brad to send you that previewer.
One last question, how you fight the hops, and it is a new segment where I'm asking my guests a short-term goal, something they're working on right now that they hope to accomplish within the next month or two, a short-term goal, something that is just out of your reach, but you're working towards. It could be personal, it could be financial, it could be for the band, it could be physical. What are you doing right now to fight the hops?
I am planning my wedding.
No way, that's cool.
Yes, I am getting married in September.
Congrats.
Thank you. Amanda and I are going to Greece to get eloped together.
Wow.
And we're just going to enjoy a nice, good, like, getaway out in Crete after we get married in Santorini. Just got some final hoops and got to get my tux fitted a little bit. And, you know, I think that's a nice, it's like a short-term and long-term thing, you know what I mean? It's been it's been in the works for quite some time, but it's, like, such in the foreseeable future that, like, it's, like, right in my grasp. Like, I almost, like, have, like, I could say Amanda's my wife and she's Amanda Simonich, you know what I mean? Looking forward to that shit, dude.
it's a wonderful thing, and it's you go through 2, 3, 4, 5 months where you're just, it's my wife. It's just something that happens.
Dude, oh my god, I cannot wait to do that. I didn't even think about that. Too, oh my god, yes.
David, thank you so much. Hanging out with me, talking about your life, talking about music, talking about weed. This is an excellent 420 episode. Just perfect. I really appreciate it. Everyone get ready. It's coming. Signs of the Swarm, Amongst the Low and the Empty, July 28th, Century Media. Thank you so much. This was amazing.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. Man, this was an awesome conversation. I sort of realized a few weeks ago that I was approaching episode 420 and I hadn't really had the concept of doing an episode like this. So I panically wrote a bunch of people saying, who should I get? Who is a weed forward metal individual the way that I'm a beer forward individual? And so many amazing people pointed me towards David. So I'm super stoked of how all this episode came together. I loved my chat with David. First off, he's just super cool, and what a fantastic vocalist this guy is. I can't put enough emphasis on that. The new Signs of the Swarm album, Amongst the Low and the Empty, will be dropping on July 28th via Century Media. Go check it out. If you haven't checked it out, you most definitely should, because it's a banger of an album, and I think you're going to like it. Massive cheers to David for hanging out with me, for being an advocate for cannabis. I think it's so goddamn cool. Thank you for being a very special guest on episode 420. Now, if you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. You can do that on my website, voxandhops.com. That's voxandhops.com. And when you do that, you shall receive one email a week that will contain all of the details of everything that has happened in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. You can see which episodes I dropped recently. You will get to see which episodes I have coming up. You will also get to hear about any projects I have in the works before I announce them to the public. And you will get to see which albums the Vox and Hops album review crew have reviewed recently, and which albums Jerry Monk, Vox and Hops' metal architect, has added to the Brutal Awakenings playlist. If you are ever looking for something good, something new, something brutal to listen to, well, trust me, Jerry will have you covered. The Brutal Awakenings playlist is available on both Apple Music and Spotify, and it is literally filled each week with the best brand new music. There's always a lot of things going on in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, and I hate when you miss a single thing, so please do me a favor and sign up to the mailing list. The Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts. I hope you have a killer rest of the week. I will be back next week with one episode with Justin McKinney from the Zenith Passage. But until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops hits.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.